Welcome to the latest edition of the Small Business Britain podcast, where I am joined by the hugely inspiring Shah Wasmund MBE. Shah is not only a best-selling author, but is the founder of the Freedom Collective and online community, The Six Figure Club, which works with business owners to give them financial choice and leverage. She has been named as one of the 20 most inspirational entrepreneurs in the UK by the Sunday Times and has been named as one of the most inspiring women in the UK. Shah's joined us today to share her story and her determination to break the social status quo and her passion for business, which saw her be the only female boxing promoter in the world at the time, and how she secured James Dyson as her first client in her PR company. It's a really empowering chat. We hope you enjoy. Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Small Business Britain podcast. I am very, very excited today to be joined by the wonderful Shah Wasmund, MBE. What I love about Shah is that she's so dedicated to supporting entrepreneurs and giving pragmatic, amazing advice in how we can all support each other and get the success we all deserve. So Shah, hi, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm really genuinely glad to be here. My favourite topics, not talking about myself, I might add, in case it came out wrong, actually talking about how we can support small businesses.
Lovely. Well, it's brilliant to have you here. Now, you know, what we were just saying, our audience are small business owners. You know, it's been a hell of a year, let's be honest, so far. And there's a lot of intrepidation, a lot of fear around that. But what we're also seeing is this amazing resilience and support and community. And these small businesses, you know, seeing this challenging time, but actually pivoting, I know I'm not really keen on that word, but adapting their business and you know, opening new revenue streams, opening things that they would never even think about, which is so encouraging. How are you finding it from your side? Are you seeing the same?
Well, I'll be honest, the first 3-4 months, I made a conscious decision that I was just going to double down and serve my audience. And I have always been about creating equity, creating social mobility, where some people might go into politics to create change. I went into business to create change for my own financial circumstances, but also to help create and elicit change for other people. I really do believe that running your own business, entrepreneurialism, small business is the best way to create real social mobility. So I made a decision that I was just going to double down and show up even more for my communities. And for me personally, it wasn't just COVID and the pandemic. It was also very much the murder of George Floyd in America, the Black Lives Matter movement, the just unraveling of society as a whole that I saw happening in front of me, the divisions. And these are the things that really matter to me. And so I'm very grateful to have a platform and be able to use it to speak up about the things that count. Now, I say this because I think I probably lost a good few months of momentum because I was, you know, lucky to be in a position where I'm financially empowered enough to say, well, if I lose a bit right now, it's okay, because right now my greater goal is serving my people, and then I can come back in and figure out what I'm going to do with my business. And now as we record this, and we're, you know, just heading out of the second lockdown, and we don't really know what's ahead of us, I actually find things to be quite positive. And you know, I said to you before we jumped on, I'm not a Pollyanna. I don't believe in the all just wish for it all and it will all happen and everything will be okay. I do believe in positive thinking, but I also believe that positive thinking has to have pragmatic action attached to it. So for me, what I'm seeing is there are more and more people online than ever before, out of sheer necessity, right? And it's a world that I've operated in for the last 5 years, but it's a world that I think more and more people are starting to realize that actually there is a space and a place for everybody online. No matter what you do, there is a way for you to build an online business. I really do believe that.
That's phenomenal. And we completely concur. And, you know, it's not going anywhere, is it? Digital skills online is only going to grow. So you have to be present as a business owner. So, you know, I love that you've sort of, you know, made sure that you were looking after your audience at this time and made sure you were available to them. And I think that has been so vital. And I'm sure your audience have been so appreciative of that, because, you know, it has been a little bit of a lost time, hasn't it, where people have need that a little bit of a handhold, yeah, and a bit of guidance.
And I think, Karen, definitely. I think it's not just the guidance from a business perspective. And, you know, there was the practical guidance, unpacking what bounce back loans were, unpacking what civil, yeah, loans were, unpacking what the ramifications are. Should you do it? Should you not do it? Unpacking the grants, unpacking all of the government support, that practical help. But equally, I think it's really important to acknowledge that a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of small business owners who are listening to this operate in quite silos. Their friends, their partners, their families don't necessarily understand what they do, don't necessarily have the same challenges that they do. I know a lot of entrepreneurs whose partners were on full paid furlough for 3-4 months whilst they were working 14 hours a day. And really, sometimes all they wanted was a place where they could be seen and heard.
Yep. Huge. And we're seeing this time and time again. It's not that the business is secondary, not by long shot, but on an equal footing is the community and the support and just that understanding, like you said. So creating that space, I think, has been vital. So you have always, I've been very lucky to hear you speak before, and you talk passionately about you've always had this penchant for business and you've always had this interest. For people that don't know your phenomenal story, would you mind giving us a little bit of your background and telling us how you got to where you are?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you the whistle stop tour so I don't bore anyone. But I do think that the context is important, because I think that sometimes when we see people, you know, I have an MBE, the Sunday Times name is one of the top 20 most influential entrepreneurs in the UK. That's amazing. I'm really proud of all of that. But what it can feel like to other people watching this is, well, you know, it's all right for you, the advice that you give, because you must have been born into a situation where things were easier for you. You know, your story is different to mine. It's harder for me. And I really want to make it clear to everybody that, you know, my story was really tough, not pretty tough. It was really tough. Like, I was born in California. I'm very public about the fact that my dad was a narcotics abuser. He was violent. My mum and my dad went through a very, very traumatic divorce. We returned to the UK homeless, having nowhere to live. So we were housed in a hostel for homeless families, which I lived in for nearly 2 years before we were then put onto a council estate waiting list. I grew up through all my teenage years on a council estate. I never left the country. We didn't have any money to go on holidays. I lived off the welfare state. I had subsidized school meals, which is why I am a big proponent of paying my taxes and supporting those who are more vulnerable than me, because I was that person once. And I think this is important because it is my North Star. Yes, I'm massively ambitious. Yes, I'm very grateful that I've built, you know, multiple seven-figure businesses across multiple industries doing totally different things because I'm passionate about business. But really, for me, what it's about is encouraging others, no matter where you're at right now, to understand that truthfully, it is all possible. It's not all possible by wishing for it. You have to do the work. And I think that one of my bugbears with society today is we seem to be in a society that just wants a quick fix, and we want to do it all effortlessly. Yeah. And we want to make six figures tomorrow, and we don't really want to have to do any work for it. And that's definitely not what I teach. I teach that there is a smarter way to make money, but you still have to do the work. You know, one of my favorite books is actually Stephen Pressfield, Do the Work, right? And The Art of War. Your work should be enjoyable. You should want to do the work. It's a privilege to make an effort in your work. I think that we need to start to become much more proud of doing the work. I'm proud of doing the work. I'm proud that I work hard, but I also take 17 weeks holiday a year. So I just want to add that in there, because I don't want anyone thinking that I'm a proponent of working 12-hour days, 6 days a week. I am 100% not.
Yeah.
Equally, I don't think working 4 hours a week is possible either. It's a balance between the two.
Yeah, and getting what's right for you, isn't it? And I think, you know, it's that balance. That's the key word at the moment, isn't it, that everybody's striving for. And I dare say, as small business owners, 9 times out of 10 people do it for the flexibility, don't they? And to have that choice and to be able to, you know, do something they're passionate about, but also have that balance in their life, which is amazing. So, you know, it's such a phenomenal, inspirational story. Can we talk a bit about your boxing career, if that's okay? Could you share with us about that? Because I find it fascinating.
Yeah. So before anybody thinks that I actually get in the ring, I don't. However, I've been a mad boxing fan my whole entire life. And I was studying at the London School of Economics, doing an economics degree. Pretty much, if you do that, you are destined to work in the city, work for one of the big investment banks. That's pretty much where most people go. Maybe one of the big accounting firms, maybe one of the big law firms. I completely bucked the trend and I won a competition to write for Cosmopolitan magazine whilst I was at LSE. And to cut a long story short, I absconded with some letterheaded paper from the editor's office. And I wrote a letter to the then super middleweight champion, Chris Eubank. And I asked him for an interview for Cosmo magazine, to which he duly accepted. And I thought, oh, shit, what do I do now? So I had to go into the editor's office and fess up and tell her what I'd done. And she was so massively supportive. I mean, that's a whole podcast in itself about the power of people in your career who put their necks on the line to help you and the difference that makes. And encouraging everybody listening to this to think about how can you be that person for somebody else in their career.
Yep.
She was a massive champion for me right from the very beginning. And Chris offered me a job at the end of the interview. And so in my final year at LSE studying economics, I found myself the world's only licensed female boxing manager working all over the world. I mean, it was insane. And truthfully, my biggest regret of my career, and by the way, I was offered a 5% stake in a very early social media company called Bebo and to come on board as their CEO.
Gosh.
And I was offered a 5% stake and I turned it down. And 18 months later, they sold for $825 million. So that on the surface would seem like the dumbest move I've ever made. However, I really should have become a sports agent. I was absolutely in my element. But because of my background, because of where I came from and how I'd grown up, it just didn't feel like a credible career choice. I felt like I had to tick these boxes. I had to have validation. I had to do something serious. It didn't. Whereas now I'm thinking, God, if my son wanted to become a sports agent, I'd be like, yes, Jet.
Yeah.
How are we going to make this happen, Jet? But for me, it was like, oh, who, you know, that's not like a real job.
So these preconceptions really influenced your decision making and these, you know, insecurities about your upbringing, which I think so many people can relate to, can't
100%,
they? You know, it feeds in
all the time. And sometimes you're not even aware of them, right? The hardest limiting beliefs we have are the ones that are invisible. And if we know what they are, we can be more conscious of them. But the invisible ones, they're more insidious. They kind of like creep up on you. And they're very damaging, because if I had made a different decision back then, I'm totally convinced I would be running one of the world's leading sports agents right now. Like I was in an incredible position. I loved, and I was damn good at what I did.
Yeah.
And I loved it. But, you know, hindsight is a wonderful thing, right? So it's more about how do I take what I learned from that to change what I want to do going forwards.
I like what you were talking about those key people that are so influential, because, you know, your boss at the time could have actually fired you or told you off for, 100%. You know, doing what you did, arguably, whereas actually she chose to support you and that changed the course of your life, didn't it? And I think it's so empowering, isn't it, to be one of those people for others, definitely, and pay it forward.
Not only did she support me, even though she did say, Char, you are a little crazy. Who did you think reading Cosmo magazine would want to read about boxing other than you? Now, maybe today that might be different, but back then she was probably right. But do you know what she did next? She did one of the most incredible things. She picked up her phone in her office and she called the features editor at News of the World. And she said, I know you've been trying to get, it was a friend of hers. And she said, I know you've been trying to get an interview with Chris Eubank for a while and you haven't got it. I think I've got it. How much are you prepared to pay for it? So they told her a figure, which was 15,000.
Gosh.
And she said, okay, I'll get it sorted for you. And do you know what she did? She set that up to pay off my student loan.
Oh,
yeah.
This woman is a hero. I imagine her values and her way of working has sort of set you on your way.
Oh, 100%.
For how you treated your staff.
100%. And, yeah. She changed the trajectory of my life. She changed so much. She really, really, really believed in me. You know, she really believed in me. And I think she saw how hardworking I was. She saw that I wasn't asking for a handout. Not only did I not want, I didn't even want a leg up. I just wanted a level playing field. And where I came from, you know, I didn't have a level playing field. I was starting from a deficit, which I know a lot of people do. I mean, that is the truth. If you're, you know, I'm not anti-white men, but, you know, the truth is, if you're a middle class, upper middle class white male, you start at the front of the queue. And from that point, we all go backwards. And, you know, whether it's race, whether it's your gender, whether it's your age, whether it's your ability or your disability, from, you know, from the starting point of being a middle class, upper middle class, white male, everything goes backwards. And so if you grow up incredibly poor, I don't just mean, you know, you lived in a two-bedroom flat that you owned and you had to share a bedroom with your sister. I mean, growing up in a hostel for homeless families and the government paid for your food, that is really poor. And when you are really poor, you don't really have a lot of role models around you naturally and immediately to show you how things could be different.
Yeah.
So for most people, what happens is they end up just repeating patterns and staying in that environment. It's quite hard to break out of that environment. You know, it sounds a little bit like a cliche, but you can't be what you can't see. If you can't see yourself in something, it's very hard for you to visualize how you can become that person. It's hard for you to map out, okay, what do I need to do to get to that place? And that's why I am so passionate about what I do, because I don't believe that I am anything special other than I think I have superhuman powers of taking action. But I do believe that's available to everybody.
Completely. And I think that's so amazing that you're so open in terms of talking about your upbringing, because if you can just inspire someone who maybe is going through that to think, you know what, I can do that, because a lot of us do just think these are the cards I've been dealt. This is it. You know, it's that lack of aspiration because we don't think we can do it, can we? So it's huge.
My view is I'd be like, fuck that shit. Take your fucking cards back. I'm going to go and create my own deck. Because you've got one life, and I don't want anybody to think that it's going to be easier, because I think that when you think it's going to be easy and then you realize it's quite difficult, you give up because you've been telling yourself it's going to be easy. Well, it's easy for everybody else. If it's not easy for me, then there's something wrong with me. No, hold on. It's not easy for anyone. All these Photoshop stories that we see on Facebook and Instagram, they're not real and they're not true. They're no truer than the Photoshop pictures. People telling you about their perfect lives and their perfect businesses, it's not true. It's not true for them. And I wish more people would be honest, because then what would happen is we'd all go, okay, you know, I've got to roll my sleeves up and do a bit of hard work. But if I make the work I love, it's not going to feel like hard work.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to feel like work I love. And I'm going to be proud of putting the effort in. And I'm going to be proud of actually doing the work.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that we live in a society that doesn't appreciate that, and we need to get back to appreciating it.
What's been encouraging in the last few months when we've been speaking to small business owners is this craving almost for authenticity and realness, and almost the demise of the influencer, which, you know, we're a little bit all for, because people are seeing through it. They want to see real. They are forgiving unpolished posts. They actually prefer them to see the people, how they're going through. And, you know, I hate the phrase taking you on a journey, but, you know, they want to see these businesses and how they have coped, and you know, they are struggling, and can you help me? And are you seeing that a lot with the people you're working with as well?
Definitely. I think there are people in this industry, I don't know whether you put it in the online education industry, in the coaching, in the mentoring industry, that I question what business experience some people have had. Like, I think it's really important that if you seek business advice from someone, this is just my view, other people can have different views. If you seek business advice or mentoring from someone, they need to have business experience. They can't have just made their money from telling other people how to make money being a business coach. That to me is a stack of cards. It's like multi-level marketing. It is, there's no solid foundations. And by the way, having real experience also means that you've failed at some things too. Because if you don't accept and don't talk about the things that didn't work out, it's not believable. Like, who here has 100% success rate? Like, no one. Think about the greatest sports players of all time, somebody like Michael Jordan. Yes, he's scored more baskets than anyone else. He also took more shots than anyone else, right?
Yeah.
So put it into perspective. Richard Branson, you think he hasn't had a few failed companies? Oh my gosh, go and Google it. Richard Branson has had so many failed businesses, but for him, it's just part of the journey. And there's a saying that you shouldn't share your stories until they're a scar, not a scab. So what that means is when you come out the other side of it and it's now a scar, you can look back on it with all your, you know, all the positive vibes, all the things, and then you can share the story. I understand that. But for me personally, I think it's better to share with people. My way of doing it is I'm going to share when it's actually ripped and bleeding. I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to share when it's ripped and bleeding. I'm going to share when it's turned into a scab. And I'm going to share when it's, you know, when it's a scar and we're all out the other side. Here's why. Because if I don't share what it's like in the moment when I'm going through things, then when other people are in the moment, they have no one to relate to. Mm. All they can relate to is, okay, well, I have all these success stories out here. All of these people seem to have had it sus. And when they went through problems, everything just miraculously turned itself around overnight, because that's what it seems like in the narrative that people portray. So then you're sat there thinking, well, why is this not happening to me? Okay, well, then it must be me, because everybody else manages to turn this around overnight.
Yeah.
I'm not, so I'm the problem. No, you're not the problem. The problem is the artificial narrative that everybody else is portraying.
Massively. And then you can sadly go down that rabbit hole.
Yes, you can.
And lose yourself, yep. Can't you? Because you're so impacted by other people. So, you know, the credibility and the realness, and, you know, share it with your people, and, you know, your audience are there for you, aren't they? You know, you've got that network because of you and because of your story.
100%. And it's about showing up for the people and actually really caring about your customers, caring about your customers, caring about your students, caring about your clients, what, you know, whatever industry you're in, you know, you might have a different terminology for them, but ultimately care for your people. And if you love on your people, they will love right back on you. And that is how you get through this. Mm. Now, I've always said that you should only ever compete with yourself. Collaborate with others and compete with yourself. So I don't look at other people worrying about what they're doing. I look at myself and think, okay, am I doing enough for me? Is this enough for me? And if it's not, then what am I going to do about it?
Yeah. You are listening to the Small Business Britain podcast with me, Karen Campbell. Looking forward to 2021, because it's December next week. What the hell? How's your 2021 looking? What are you focusing on? Is it the Six Figure Club community? Have you got other stuff going on?
Absolutely. I've got a new program launching in January, and our core focus throughout the year will be the Six Figure Club. And the Six Figure Club is like a gym for your business. So it's a membership model, and it's very much for anybody who's in business, small business owners, entrepreneurs who want constant support and community to help move their business forward. So I look at it three ways. The first thing is, I truly believe that every single business can get to making six figures a year, every business, no matter what you're doing. But the next stage is, okay, how can I help you start taking six figures home? Then the third stage is, how do we get you keeping six figures a year in profit?
Mm.
That's why I focus on six figures. For most family units living in, you know, capital cities across the Western world, the average cost for a family unit is about £5,000, $5,000 a month. Okay, so a family unit could be you and your partner, could be you, your partner, and a kid could be you, your partner, and two kids could be you and two kids by yourself. There's lots of different ways for a family unit. But, but as a generalization, family unit equals £5,000 overheads a month. Rent, rates, mortgage, food, car, nursery fees, stack it all up, is about £5,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So when you as a family unit start being able to take home 10K a month, you have a 5K surplus. When you have a 5K surplus, you get to start to invest in your ISAs and your pension, so you can retire rich, not retire poor. You also get to start to put money away that you could then potentially use as a deposit for a property investment. You get to put money away that you could use to, you know, maybe buy a franchise or expand your business, or lots of different opportunities that you can do to create assets that in turn create more wealth. Why is this important? It's important to me because I want to teach people not just how to create wealth for personal gain, but how to create generational wealth. And you create generational wealth by creating assets. And you can't do that until you're taking home sufficient income, which is why that's my focus. At the start of this conversation, I was talking about, you know, if you're white middle-class male and you go to a private school, you start at the front of the queue. And what typically happens is that happens for generations. And what typically happens when you grow up in a hostel for homeless families is that also happens for generations. But what I'm proudest of most is I've been able to create a generational intervention in the trajectory of my family's finances. By doing the things that I've done and making the choices that I've made, I have created not just personal gain for myself, I've created generational wealth, not just for my son, but for his children, so for my grandchildren. So now they will all get to start at the front of the race too. That is how we level the playing field. That's how we make sure that the top of society looks more like the bottom of society.
Yeah.
That actually when we look up at the people who have the most influence and the most wealth, they look like us too. Mm. And that is really important to me. And so I don't want to pussyfoot around the fact that we need to make money to make these changes. And somebody out there is making the money, so why not you?
Yeah, that's so inspiring. And it is this disjointedness, isn't it, that I think people struggle with when, you know, you, like you were saying, you do look up to the front of the queue and you're like, well, I'm not educated in that way. I'm not from that stock. It can't be me. But having these shifts, and I think we're seeing at the moment this generation of entrepreneurs like yourself are doing that work, aren't they? They are making those headways to get to be those generational shifters. And it's phenomenal. For small business owners then that are listening to this and, you know, being inspired, how can they get involved and find out a bit more about working with you and following you? Is it all on your Instagram? Or?
Yeah, you can follow it. I have a really unusual name, Shah Wasmond, easy to find. But what I would say is probably the best place to go is shah.com, shaa.com, and then type in the Six Figure Club, and that's a numerical six. That's the best place to come and join us and find out more about us. And of course, you can find me all across social media. And I have a brand new podcast out called called Building a Bigger Table. So if you want to go and the first thing you want to do is just go and find out a little bit more, head on over there, have a listen. And if you want support and help with your business, then I would definitely head to shah.com/the Six Figure Club. And I want to leave one little tip, because this is something.
Yes, please.
Okay. Do you have kids?
Yes, I have a 1.5-year-old, hence the bags under my
eyes. Okay, so you're going to thank me for this later. Although if you are already doing this, you are going to get bonus points. All right.
Ooh.
Before I was even pregnant with my son, who is now 15, I was at a business development conference. And this woman, Jill Fielding, said one thing that stuck in my mind. She made a throwaway comment that you could set up a pension for children and that the government would have to contribute.
What?
It stuck in my head. It stuck in my head, okay? Stuck in my head.
Yeah.
So when I became pregnant with my son, it was still in my head. From the first day that my son was born, I have deposited the maximum amount that I can into his pension every single month, which is £250 a month. And as a 40% taxpayer, the government has to also contribute.
Really?
And let me tell you why this is so good. If you invest into your child's pension, well, how else are you going to get the government to contribute? I mean, they're not going to contribute to the premium bonds. They're not going to contribute to the savings accounts. And here's the other thing. I want my son to grow up with a really good work ethic. So I love the fact that actually I'm protecting him for his future, but he's got to work for his present. I've always said to him, you want an apartment, you want a flat, you want a car, it's the same deal. Every pound that you save, that you make, I'll match you. But there's no blank check being given.
Brilliant.
Why do we not know about these things? Why are these things not more widely publicised? Why are we not better financially educated? Because it's not just about making the money. It's about keeping the money. It's about doing good with the money. It's about doing good for yourself, your family and your wider community.
That is so interesting, because obviously when we were pregnant, we did the same and we're like, right, well, what should we do? And all the advice was, you know, open a savings account, do this. So that's, and we put that amount of money away for him each month. So thank you so, so much for taking the time to talk to us today. It's been so inspiring. And, you know, as small business owners and entrepreneurs out there, it's just so amazing to hear your story and that, you know, there's no glass ceiling here. Anything's possible if we put our mind to it and do what we love. So thank you so, so
absolute
much.
Absolute pleasure.
Take care. Bye-bye. What a fascinating and empowering chat with Shah. A huge thank you for taking the time to join me today. It was so inspirational and humbling hearing about Shah's upbringing and her determination to succeed despite the roadblocks she faced and her dedication to championing and supporting fellow entrepreneurs. We hope you enjoyed it. Please do share this podcast and really do check out the other episodes. There are some great ones in there, and we'll see you next time.
The Small Business Britain podcast is hosted by Karen Campbell from karencampbellmarketing.com. The producer, editor and composer is Ben Lloyd Evans from bleproduction.com. You can always find out more at smallbusinessbritain.uk.